This episode of the Disney Film Project is sponsored by TouringPlans.com. Head over to TouringPlans.com and use their tools to save yourself time and money when you are at Walt Disney World or Disneyland. You can use the Lines application on your mobile phone, use the crowd calendar to figure out which parks to hit which days, or use the Touring Plans to save time and money waiting in line. TouringPlans.com is the sponsor of this episode of the Disney Film Project. Welcome again, everybody, to the Disney Film Project podcast. This is the show where we talk about the films of the Walt Disney Company, be they Marvel, Pixar, Lucasfilm, Disney Toon Studios, or Muppet Studios. We talk about it all here on this program and over at DisneyFilmProject.com. I am Ryan Kilpatrick, host of this program, and along with these folks you're about to meet, we run DisneyFilmProject.com, where you can find the show notes for this show. You can find all kinds of great Blu-ray and DVD reviews. You can find historical content about old shorts and movies. It's all over there for you at DisneyFilmProject.com, so make sure you go and check that out. All right, first up, we have our fine film experts. We have Mr. Todd Perlmutter, who I believe in another life was a famous puppeteer. Is that correct?
I manipulate the world.
As long as you're not the master of puppets, that's okay. That's a whole different genre that we would be going down.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Why don't we tell people about old shorts? Don't you just throw out old shorts and buy new ones?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
It's a service that we provide at our website.
Okay, cool.
Also joining us, of course, we have our other fine film expert. That is Miss Rachel Culp, who you can find at justpressplay.net. How are you, Rachel?
I'm doing great. This is one of my favorite Christmas movies, so I was really looking forward to tonight's episode.
Me too. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, actually. And, of course, we have our wonderful producer, the one and only Miss Cheryl Perlmutter, who you can find on Twitter at CherylP3 or at about.me/CherylP3. How are you this evening, Cheryl?
I'm not doing so good, but I'm ready for Hanukkah, which is almost a week away.
Yeah, it's coming up. Probably happened by the time people hear this, but it's coming.
I have to do math on that one.
That's right. We are getting in the holiday spirit, though, with today's movie, The Muppet Christmas Carol. It is the 1992 release from Walt Disney Pictures and Jim Henson Productions. And as we do from time to time, we ask people to come and join us to talk about some of their favorite films and some of the things that they have enjoyed over the years. We have one of our fans and friends, the one and only Mr. Anthony Markham, who you can find on Twitter. And I've already forgotten the numbers at the end of your name, Anthony.
I'm glad to fill that in. My Twitter name is ATrain74.
And you are also a blogger, correct?
I also blog for my friends at www.happyplace.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us this evening.
Also, I wanted to clarify on how Anthony got in, because a bunch of people have been asking, how do I get in? How do I do stuff? Well, one thing we decided to do this year, because I was in the giving spirit, is we did the listener choice poll. And what I did is I said, okay, so the listener choice poll, we did a scientific method, which Todd can explain how our scientific method. and Anthony's movie was chosen. And so as part of his movie being chosen, that's why we invited him on. So that's, if you think you'll have a movie that you like, maybe we're covering it next year. Maybe we're not. Worst case, we're not. So I know some people have their favorite films, and, well, some of them were really waiting for Blu-ray on. But if you have a fit, but if you're, that's a listener and have a movie, and just shoot us an email, and you never know, next year we might change the category on listener choice. And you never know. You might be chosen.
That's right. You never know what's going to happen. If you listen to us, talk back to us, send us emails, participate in the polls, you don't know. You could end up hosting the show.
And Todd, I want you to explain the scientific method.
So it came down to listener choices, and we had to pick them, right? And Betsy was over, and I said to Cheryl, I said, just write them all on a sheet of paper. I got a plan. So, you know, write them down on separate sheets of paper and give me the sheets of paper. So I laid them down on the floor and let Jasper pick.
I think that's very scientific.
I thought it was a Christmas miracle.
Indeed. I agree, Anthony. All right, so we are talking about The Muppet Christmas Carol. Again, released in 1992. Didn't do ginormous numbers at the box office. Of course, Muppet films are notoriously cheap to produce. This one, very all accounts, a budget in the teens of $12-13 million range. And more than doubled that at the box office. But I think Disney was expecting a little more. They were marketing this very heavily. And
well, there's a good reason why it didn't do very well at the box office.
Yes.
Because it came out right around the same time as Aladdin and Home Alone 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just within, like, a few weeks of each other. And those were both just killing at the box office. There was, I think, Muppet Christmas Carol came in, I think it topped around, like, 5 or 6, like, in the top 10 at the box office, but I don't think it ever even broke the top 3.
Wow.
If I remember correctly.
Well, I can tell you that I was one of those who was there on opening day, and I did not see either of those other two films in the theater. So I was a dedicated Muppet fan. Did anyone else see this in the theaters?
I didn't see any of
them.
My parents are lifelong Muppet people, so yeah, we were seeing this in theaters.
Awesome.
It was a family field trip for me also.
Yeah, me too. Me too. The whole family went, and I even talked a young lady into joining us, as awkward as that was. With my parents and a young lady. But anyway. It is a retelling of Charles Dickens' story, A Christmas Carol, with Michael Caine starring as Ebenezer Scrooge, and the Muppets filling in the majority of all the other parts. This is probably, of all the Muppet films, and correct me if I'm wrong here, any of you Muppet fans on the panel here, the least Muppet-centric, because Michael Caine drives all the action, as opposed to, like, most of the other films, the Muppets drive all the action.
Yes, this was actually the first time that a human character was central to the plot of a Muppet movie. Obviously, with the revival of it and the new The Muppets, there is a human character at the center of that, which is, you know, Jason Segel's character. But before this was the first time that a human character was central to it.
The one we all want to kind of give a nod to is Muppet Treasure Island, though.
Well, didn't that come out after?
Yeah, it comes after.
Yeah, so.
It's the next movie, in fact, right?
Yeah, because they were this whole, like, we're going to adapt classic stories thing, which I think they should have continued doing that. I think that was a great idea.
You obviously haven't seen Muppets Wizard of Oz.
That's right. Never mind.
Well, we may be covering that, so eventually we'll have to cover that, folks.
I'm sure we will. Yeah,
I think I blocked that from my memory. So
probably with good reason. I was so excited for that too because I love The Wizard of Oz, but that's a whole other story for another day. But yeah, this is the other thing that's notable about this is that this is the first of the Muppet films to be released by Walt Disney Pictures, right? We had the Muppet Movie, Great Muppet Caper, and Muppets Take Manhattan before this, and this is about the time that Disney was quote-unquote buying Jim Henson Productions and the Muppets. That, of course, never happened until much later, but this is that time period. And it's also the first Muppet film made without the direct involvement of Jim Henson. It was one of his ideas. But he was not actually involved in the production.
Yes. His son wanted to bring it to fruition as kind of a way to honor him. So that's why the movie opens with the you know, Jim Henson. Of course, Richard Hunt died while they were making the movie, so they added him in too.
That was such a sad thing to see in the opening credits.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And there's little nods to Henson throughout the movie, too. that we can talk about as we go forward with it.
Yeah. One of the other things that they did is the soundtrack, the lyrical parts of the soundtrack are all written by Paul Williams, who has a long-standing relationship with the Muppets.
Mm-hmm. So, all about the Muppet Show and was in the first couple of movies.
Yep.
Yeah, I actually read an interview with Paul Williams that came out with the LA Times right before the movie came out, and he actually spoke about how this project was very personal to him, not only because of his longstanding relationship with Jim Henson, but also because he had been coming out of quite a bit of substance abuse. He had actually gotten clean and sober, and he said I've got the quote here, it's Scrooge's metamorphosis that touches me, the way that he changes completely in one night. It's what took me 49 years to do, which I thought was a very profound quote. And he still does quite a bit of work, apparently, with substance abuse programs. And I just thought that was really interesting.
Cool.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. This is probably of all the Muppet films, this is my favorite, and it's probably for sentimental reasons. I think the Muppet movie is probably a better film, but this one just, you know, if any of you guys follow me on Twitter or keep close tabs on me, you know, through the podcast, you probably know that I'm a Christmas fanatic, and this is one of the films that really just makes the season for me. So. My kids were all concerned when I was watching this movie in November. They're like, are we going to watch it again in December? I said, yes, we will. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the big wins for this movie were just some of the choices made. I mean, like we said, we talked about Michael Caine, who honestly, I feel like had anybody else played Scrooge in this Muppet movie would have been terrible.
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely possible.
And, you know, and that and the choice to use the narration because he really wanted to pay homage to, you know, Dickens' prose was the whole
yes.
reason for having the narration. And, I mean, those two things combined were just they just make the movie, you know, they bind it together.
Well Todd, do you know why Michael Caine is so great, though, in the role?
Because he's Michael Caine.
Well, yes. Not just that, but because he said in an interview that he approached the role as though he was acting with the Royal Shakespeare Company, not as though he was acting opposite of puppets.
Right. Yeah, I read that too. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's great.
Yeah.
You know my favorite incorrect factoid was on research.
Mm. Oh, I want to know now.
Yeah. Tell me what's wrong with this statement. Okay, this is a statement like everywhere, Wikipedia, Wikia, everybody's blog, everything. This is the first film not to feature any Sesame Street characters.
That's not true. Kermit started on Sesame Street.
That's right. Everyone says that, and everybody is wrong. You're all wrong. There you go.
Well, he started elsewhere and then ended up on Sesame Street.
Well, yes, but Sesame Street's... Like,
well, I think that was his first appearance, though, wasn't it? He was a news reporter in Sesame Street.
No, he Kermit appeared like on public access TV in black and white for many years before Sesame Street.
Yes, he was one of Henson's very early characters.
And Todd, you should know that.
What? No, I know, because when you really got to see the Henson show when it travels around and they set it up at the various museums around the country. It really walks you through that whole thing. I mean, you know, he was first, Ralph was his second well-known Muppet, not his second Muppet, but his second well-known Muppet, I would say. You know, so it's big stuff. Ralph was like on a laundry detergent commercial first, right?
Yeah, I think so, something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're right about that exhibit, though. They had it here a couple of years ago, and it's amazing.
Yeah, that, you know, Star Trek one's another one to see if you catch around the country. But what I want to say is about Ralph is he doesn't speak in the movie, but he's in the scene at Fozziwig's, right? Well, they had to have Kermit speak, right? And we can get to that in a second. They to pay homage to a lot of the characters that were done by Hunt and Henson. Who had passed, they put them in the movie but didn't have them speak. A lot of the characters that they primarily did.
Yeah, and it's great because Ralph he gets his own dedicated shot. Like, it isn't like he's just, you know, somewhere in the shot with a bunch of other Muppets. He gets his own one shot.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, so I think everyone knows the story of A Christmas Carol fairly well. So, you know, we'll go through the plot of the film and talk about some of the choices that they made and how they made the film, probably a little bit more than the story itself. But I think one of the interesting things that you noted, Todd, is that the film opens with the shots of the London streets and everything, and it's the narration of Rizzo the Rat and Gonzo the Great playing Charles Dickens, with Rizzo kind of chiming in from time to time. And the amazing thing is, like you said, they wanted to pay homage to Dickens' prose, but the film itself, of all the different adaptations of A Christmas Carol, is probably the most, with, I can think of one, maybe two exceptions, but the most faithful to the Dickens text, which, when you say Muppet Christmas Carol, that's not what I'm expecting.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's something that everybody talks about, is that, everybody leaves out, there's two or three scenes that nobody ever does out of the book,
Right.
One is with the two little evil creatures, and because there's more than just Jacob and Marley and the three, the past, present, and future ghosts. There's a couple other things that go on during the night, I can't remember what the names of the evil creatures are. But that scene's not in there, and a few other things. But because the story just follows end to end and really covers a whole lot of things, and covers the relationship with Belle, which is something that's not often covered in some versions of, Scrooge and,
Yeah, it's very faithful. And also, like you said, it uses the Dickens prose not only in the narration, but in Scrooge's lines as well, which most of us are probably familiar with at this point, but they're often changed or, tweaked a little for modern sensibilities. In this case, they don't do that. And in fact, they use more of Bob Cratchit's lines in this from the Dickens text than I've seen in many of the adaptations. And, I watch a lot of them.
They also work some of it into the songs.
Yes. Very good point. So, we get introduced to the basic framing device right early on, which is Charles Dickens, played by Gonzo the Great, is going to narrate the story and tell us the story of A Christmas Carol, which Rizzo challenges him. That's one of my favorite jokes in the movie. He says, "I know the story as well as the back of my hand." And when Rizzo says, "Prove it," he starts telling him about the back of his hand.
Including his mole.
Yep.
Did you read how the opening flyover was filmed? Did anybody else?
I did, but please elaborate.
Yeah, so what it is all those buildings when they're flying over, and it looks like you're kind of like flying through them and they close around you. It's because they're like 2 and 3 foot tall buildings that were made on scale. And then there's actually people, as the camera is riding through them, pushing them from the sides next to each other. So they really are closing on you because that's how they filmed it.
Yeah, there's a great making of, it's an okay making of documentary on YouTube that I think they released maybe with the DVD that actually shows the streets and like these tiny little buildings.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible when you think about it, when you watch the movie as many times as I have, and you look at, they did the majority of this filming on this one tiny little set of these different streets, and if you watch closely, you can look and you can see that they've decorated the street, or they're shooting from a different end or whatever, and that's part of why the movie was so inexpensive to produce. But like when Kane's walking around in the streets and he's surrounded by Muppets, what you don't see is they have empty spaces for the puppeteers to sit under the streets and hold things up. You don't ever see any of that stuff, which is, it's really great, especially for 1992 technology, for them to figure out how to shoot that stuff.
Yeah, I read an interview where Michael Caine was talking about the fact that he constantly thought that he was going to fall and had to not portray that as part of his emotion when he was acting, because he's like walking on like narrow boards that are like balance beams in some of those filmings to get around all the Muppets and their handlers.
Yeah.
That actually explains one of my favorite parts of this movie, which is Michael Caine's awkward dancing. Michael Caine's awkward dancing is the best. We always imitate every Christmas after watching it. We will put on the soundtrack and just do our awkward little Michael Caine shuffle.
Especially with the Ghost of Christmas Present, where he does the sort of shimmy side to side.
Yes.
I had that note.
So, yeah, they're actually, according to my research, there are almost 280 Muppet characters in the movie.
Wow.
So, which, you think about it, I mean, the whole, like, these scenes, especially Fozziwig's party and, you know, the number of, like, little mouse puppets, the mouse family and everything, it just adds up.
Yeah, that's true. It's definitely more than, like if you look at the recent film, like the Muppets film with the Jake and Siegel film that you referenced, like, this whole city is populated with Muppets versus typically we're seeing Muppets put into a human environment. This is much the opposite of that. But the opening of the film is the traditional Christmas Carol opening, right, where we see Ebenezer Scrooge coming into his money-lending house where Bob Cratchit, here portrayed by Kermit the Frog, is working with all the rats, who are the other bookkeepers. And we get the three basic touchstones that you always get in this story, which is Scrooge's nephew Fred coming up to invite his uncle to Christmas dinner, the two gentlemen coming to collect for the alms for the poor, and then the talk with Bob Cratchit about, you know, whether or not they should have Christmas Day off. So all of that plays out the same way that you've expected. But I have to say that Michael Caine, to me, delivers the best, if you remember, if you've seen other versions of the story, the, you know, let them go to the poorhouse set of that monologue that he delivers to the charitable seekers who are played by Bunsen Honeydew and Beaker. I think he does that the best of any Scrooge of all the adaptations, because he's so cold and calculating about it. It's not angry. It's just, this is the way it is. Move on with your life.
Well, the scene also made Total Film's top five meanest Christmas movie moments, specifically when he throws the Christmas wreath at Bean Bunny.
I kind of like that because I don't like beans.
Well, neither did the Muppet performers. That's why they put it in the movie, because it was a lot of them didn't like the character, and they enjoyed finding moments in the movie where they could abuse him.
Yes, as a Muppet fan, I was glad to see being the target of that flying wreath. And I agree with you, what you said, Ryan, in regards to the way Caine just plays it. So simply, it's such a nice contrast to some of the traditional Muppet, quote-unquote, zaniness. I thought it was very nicely done.
Yeah, it's like Todd and Rachel were saying earlier. You know, he's playing it like he's playing with the Royal Shakespeare Company. So, I mean, he doesn't let any bit of that, you know, crack underneath and shine through. Like, unlike, and this is no knock on this on the other movies, but like if you watch the Muppet movie, everybody who's doing a cameo in the Muppet movie has a little giggle or a little, you know, sparkle in their eye, like almost looking at the camera like, we know we're talking to puppets. I feel like Michael Caine played it the straightest of just about anybody, probably until Jason Segel.
Yeah. I agree.
I don't know. Steve Martin was pretty good, too, though.
Oh, I love Steve Martin.
That's true.
You know the scene where right at the end of all this, when they leave after they close up the shop and they're singing their song there?
Yes.
What is that? One More Sleep Till Christmas, that song. Brian Henson, sorry. When I say Henson, probably it's going to be Brian Henson, you know, obviously, during this movie. He said one of the hardest shots they had to do for the entire movie was having Kermit's hand lock the door, because it had to look realistic.
Hmm.
You know, and Kermit's got that little rinky-dink non-hand, so.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
there's a lot of Kermit stuff that happens in this particular sequence because he's walking home and singing that song, and it's like you've got him sort of standing by himself, and you see the shooting star, which is another one of the references to Jim Henson. But there's a lot of Kermit just by himself, not being, you know, not having a visible puppeteer, not only in this part, but later on in the movie too, which I think, again, like in 1992, that was amazing to see.
Yeah, the ice skating scene really jumps out to me as being something that was probably very difficult for them to film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's all green screen and ants and stuff like that. They actually talk about it in the commentary for the movie a lot. One of the very interesting things is you have to note that everybody else puts skates on except for Kermit, who skates in bare feet.
Yep.
Because that's just how he rolls, because he's Kermit.
Kermit does not wear shoes.
Yes.
Well, I was going to say, as Gonzo puts it in the commentary, I believe this is the first movie where Kermit didn't work naked.
Nice.
So, and I have to say, Kermit's look in this movie is my favorite, I think, of all the Kermit looks in any of the movies. Just Kermit with the top hat and the scarf and everything looks right.
Yes. I, in fact, have the only Kermit that I have is a Kermit that has the vest that he's wearing from this movie. I think we have long ago, between two children, lost the top hat, but he's wearing the vest, and I can't remember where I got it. I think it was Macy's or something like that, but that is the only version of Kermit that I have, so I completely agree with you. Ooh. So the next bit of the story is, of course, Scrooge traveling home, and he is visited by the ghost of his partner, if you're following the regular story. In this case, it is both of his partners, not only Jacob Marley, so ably portrayed by Goofy in A Mickey Christmas Carol, but in this case, it is Jacob and Robert Marley, you see what they did there, portrayed by Statler and Waldorf with the song where they get to sing about how awful everyone was. The Marley and Marley song. I love this bit of the movie because they get there's the creepiness, you know, like this is a ghost story. That's one of the things that you know, a lot of people find it this heartwarming story, but at the end of the day, it is a ghost story. And so the very beginning of this, where Scrooge is walking up the stairs with the light bulb, and he's sitting by the fire, you know, trying to eat bread, and you know, weird stuff keeps happening. Like, they get the creepiness right, and then immediately shift over into this comedic yet still tonally correct song from Statler and Waldorf. Like, that's not easy to do.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. I like that the boxes were singing.
Yeah, the money boxes.
The money boxes were singing.
Well, that's okay. So, it's supposedly, I'm not sure I buy it, but maybe it's supposedly a Bob Marley reference, because Bob Marley's band was Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Yes.
Right? So they're wailing money boxes, they're singing. Right? Well, so, and he's Robert Marley is who they make Statler be. So Statler, right? I did get that right.
Yes.
I was, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
A couple things, by the way. One is, I love the fact that if you're paying close attention by this time in the movie, is Rizzo is living up to his very first point he makes in the movie, which is he is only here for the food, because every scene he is eating something completely different.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, I love that Gonzo points out he has a superpower, which is storyteller's omniscience.
Yes. That's my wife's favorite bit.
Yes, I figured she would appreciate that too. the other thing is, did anyone catch the joke that Statler and Waldorf make in reference to themselves in this scene?
Oh, it's good to be heckling again.
No, not just that, but Scrooge starts to make some jokes. Right, and they go. They tell him leave the bad jokes to the bear.
Yes.
Which makes sense, considering that they work for Fozziwig and they're at the Christmas party later.
Yeah.
True.
And they're in a balcony in that scene, too, don't forget.
Yes, they are.
Yes, they were.
Yeah. But I think the way that they, like I said, the way they balance this is amazing. The character designs of Jacob and Robert Marley is amazing. And, of course, the whole point is they warn him that, you know, look at what's happened to us. The same thing will happen to you. Three spirits are going to visit you throughout the night, and if you don't change your ways, then you will end up like us. So the familiar story that you've all heard before. So it's interesting to note here that the first ghost, of course, is the Ghost of Christmas Past. None of the ghosts, the main spirits, were established Muppets, which I think, in retrospect, obviously the way to go. But, you know, if you look at the other Muppet films, probably, you know, not what they would have done if, you know, different management, different time, etc. They created all new Muppet characters to fit in with the Dickens text. And I think that is part of what makes the movie so great, because if you have Miss Piggy as the Ghost of Christmas Past, as was considered, probably not the same movie.
You think?
Definitely not.
Also, one of my favorite moments is the whole fence bit with Gonzo and Rizzo.
Yes, that's one of my favorite moments. It's like, wait, yeah. You can fit through the fence.
Yes.
He had to go back for his jelly beans.
So the reference is that he says, and this is a quote, he says, "You are such an idiot." Gonzo says that to Rizzo. The two guys who do Gonzo and Rizzo, I always forget who's who, so I'm sure Ryan knows that, though, because he's better with names than I am. They always apparently quip while on stage at each other, and they literally always call each other idiots. So they were, like, referencing themselves being, you know, the handlers for those Muppets, so...
Yeah, it's Dave Gelles as Gonzo and Steve Whitmire as Rizzo.
And we met Gonzo, Todd.
We did meet Gonzo. I have a picture of myself hanging with Gonzo.
I am so jealous right now.
Yes.
It used to be my Twitter icon for a while.
Okay, now I'm really jealous.
Well, can I say something else also about Steve Whitmire and Dave Gelles before I forget?
Yes.
Sure.
So they actually created two other characters in this movie just because they wanted to make fun of Frank Oz. They really liked poking fun at his performance of Miss Piggy, so that's why they created the Cratchit daughters, just so that the two of them could do their impersonations of Frank Oz playing Miss Piggy.
Oh, is that why they're always, like, huffing and puffing?
Yes.
In the next car? Okay. I was wondering whether they went. So, you know, there's a trope about that this movie is one of the movies responsible for in anthropomorphized movies, and that is the fact that the males always follow whatever species the father is and the females always follow whatever species the mother is.
Oh, yeah.
True.
I do want to say, since we're mentoring Frank Oz, that he is our Star Wars connection.
He is.
Yeah, he's all over the place in the Star Wars stuff.
He is, but most well known for... Come on.
Yoda.
There you go.
Yoda.
Well, I always say it. I want to let somebody else say it, you know.
Come on. Try us. Test us, Todd. Come on. But yeah, they created a whole new character, so if you've read the Dickens stuff or if you've seen some of the other adaptations, it's a very wispy sort of a candle for a head type character as the Ghost of Christmas Past, and that ghost takes Scrooge on a journey back in time. Scrooge has to hold her hand, and they fly over the forest with Gonzo and Rizzo hanging on so that Gonzo can tell the story. Which is some of my favorite, because as they're flying through the woods and you hear Gonzo and Rizzo saying, "Sorry, oh, missed you," you know, that kind of stuff.
Consider this about this scene is this is a overlay, this Muppet, because this Muppet is not actually in any of the scenes you see her in, because she is actually done by dipping a Muppet that they created in a thing of water to get her skirt there to be all wispy. And
yeah,
they filmed it in water and then overlaid it with using mats.
Yeah, initially they were supposed to use baby oil, but it turned out to be too expensive.
Right. I remember being amazed at how they presented this ghost when I first saw the movie when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's got this otherworldly feel to it.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of the floaty nature of it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It makes it play much more realistic, which I think is hard to say about a Muppet movie, because, I mean, that lends a serious tone to some of the silliness of the schoolhouse, where Sam Eagle is the schoolmaster and, you know, Rizzo and Gonzo are knocking over busts of William Shakespeare, you know.
Muppetized busts of William Shakespeare.
Yes. That is like, if you could say you can have one prop from a movie, that's what I want. I want the Muppet William Shakespeare.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Good idea.
But yeah, one of my other favorite things in the movie is when Sam Eagle is talking to young Scrooge and telling him how proud he is that he's going into business and that it's the American way. And then Gonzo has to come and correct him and say, it's the British way.
Yeah, no, that is a great, it's because, you know, Sam has to get his signature line in, and then the correction makes it even better, so.
To your point, though, the introduction of Belle as the love interest, again, is not something that you find in a lot of the older versions of this story. You know, the Mickey Christmas Carol doesn't really touch on it. There's a lot of versions that don't touch on it, but we meet her at Fozziwig's party. So Fezziwig gets changed to Fozziwig to include Fozzie Bear, and Scrooge is introduced to her, and they fall in love. And this is probably the most controversial point of the movie for Brian Henson, because as they're breaking up, there's a song that is performed in the Blu-ray version, the DVD version, that was cut from the theatrical version. It's called When Love Is Gone, and it's actually the counterpoint to that is the last song, When Love Is Found. And so Brian Henson thought, you know, this song is perfect, right? It needs to be in here. It provides a through point for the movie. Disney disagreed, and the song was not in the theatrical release. I don't care for the song itself, but I think not having that scene does make the movie play a little strange, because if you've ever seen it without that in there, there's a large cut, and it sort of jumps for no good reason.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not really a big fan of the song either, but I do think the movie's a little less because it's not there. Especially when you get that shot of Gonzo and Rizzo just, like, crying. like 2 seconds later, it's like they're perfectly fine, and then all of a sudden they're, like, blubbering, and it doesn't make much sense.
Yeah.
Although I agree it's not the best song of the movie, I do feel it sets up the When Love Is Found later in the movie a bit better. So I do miss it.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think it should have been kept in the movie, even though it isn't the best song. I think story-wise it's important.
Yeah. Fortunately, we now have Blu-ray and DVD, which, you know, this was just recently released on Blu-ray. For those of you who want to go and pick it up, I have not yet got my copy, but I plan to. And you don't have to worry about it. It is in the home video release.
Yeah.
But that song basically ends the Ghost of Christmas Past section, and then we move on to the Ghost of Christmas Present. This is my favorite Ghost of Christmas Present in any Christmas Carol, any version.
Yes.
Also the most realistic. In terms of the actual story, because this is literally the only version of the story to ever have this particular ghost age over the course of his time with Scrooge. And that's in the book, the getting older thing.
Yes.
Oh, I thought
there for a day. Yeah.
I thought they did it in the Jim Carrey one. Maybe I'm mistaken about that.
Tom,
oh, they?
Right, you haven't seen the Jim
right.
Carrey one.
I have not seen the Jim Carrey one. That's a fair statement. So
yeah.
You are lucky.
Wow. So now I'm not rushing to see it either.
I might disagree with that assessment, but we could discuss this after the podcast.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. It's a faithful interpretation, to be sure.
And it does have its good point. Yes.
Yeah. True. But yes, we get this giant Muppet of telling Scrooge to come in and know me better, man. Again, lifted straight from the text. And he takes Scrooge around to show him how everyone is celebrating Christmas that day. So first we get to see Fred and how they're making fun of Scrooge, which is nice and funny. But the real heart of the film and the heart of the story is seeing how Bob Cratchit and his family are enjoying Christmas together and cooking the Christmas goose, and the introduction of Robin the Frog as Tiny Tim, which is just, he's like the most heartbreaking Tiny Tim.
Robin in general always had that effect no matter what he did, so it's a logical use of the particular Muppet.
I have a note actually about Tiny Tim's introduction. The first shot with Kermit walking down the street with Robin, that shot took 10 puppeteers to do it. And nearly every Muppet movie has this kind of full length, like what they term like the money shot of the movie. Like Muppet Movie has Kermit riding the bicycle. Great Muppet Caper has Kermit's Fred Astaire dance moment. But this is really like the big shot that they really wanted to get for this movie.
Yeah, not just that, but because they have Kermit walking on the street and the fact that he's walking on the street with Tiny Tim on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Then they weren't able to do any of the underpieces where they moved the pieces of the road away to have the handlers underneath. So they actually are walking next to the puppets, and then they're matted out later on.
So you have that shot and the whole, you know, again, if you've heard of Christmas Carol, you've heard the monologue about the empty chair that's being seen for the future. And the last piece of the Ghost of Christmas Present is he drops Scrooge in the graveyard, and he disappears as the bell chimes 12 to introduce the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. And what I thought was great about the narration part, again, Rizzo and Gonzo have been with Scrooge the whole way. When the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come shows up, they kind of peek out of a door and say, "Wow, this is creepy. We'll see you guys at the finale." Like, perfect spot on for what the movie was trying to accomplish. You know what I mean? Like, this was not a time for joke making.
Yeah, and it just wouldn't have worked to have Gonzo and Rizzo around for that last segment. It just, it wouldn't have worked together. Their commentary and everything.
Yeah, you don't want jokes during stuff that's supposed to be somber.
I have a quick note about Ghost of Christmas Present before we leave that completely. There were actually two people that brought this, well, more than two people, but two main performers that brought this character to life. Don Austin, who is the human performer inside of the puppet, and then there was Jerry Nelson, who was on set performing the lines and also controlling the facial expressions for the puppet by remote control. It's a deceptively complex Muppet.
Yeah, that one Muppet is pretty amazing when you stop to think about it. No, I was going to say the fact that it took two people to make it work is not surprising, considering how great the effect is.
Yeah, the behind-the-scenes documentary on YouTube actually shows them, the two of them, working together to make it happen.
Very cool. Definitely something to check out if you're interested in the movie. And I know this movie has a ton of fans out there, despite the way that it ended up at the box office. I feel like it's become sort of a part of a lot of people's Christmas traditions is to watch this. I know we have a friend who watches it every Christmas Eve, so definitely something to check out if there's some stuff like that. So of course we have the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, and again, if you've seen the story, you know how it goes. In that he shows Scrooge several different things. First, there's the four pigs who joke about attending the funeral only for the free food. sort of a gallows humor. He shows that Miss Scrooge's bedchamber has been raided, and they're selling all the stuff to old Joe, a spider who's sort of an underworld fencer. And then finally, of course, there's Scrooge being pointed to the headstone in the cemetery, showing that it's him who died and that he needs to change his ways. It's very somber, very, very, we all know where it's all headed, but you feel like Scrooge, it just sort of builds the tension until the reveal of the headstone.
He also finds the one, he also sees the one thing that's even more changing for him than anything else is that Tiny Tim has passed.
Yes.
Although the ghost of prison's president had basically told him that Tiny Tim was going to pass.
Correct. Yeah. But when he sees the empty, like the shot, the way that they frame the shot of the empty chair on the, next to the fireplace, it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great cinematography in this one. So they end up, of course, with Scrooge waking up the next day and spreading around town. What I love about the way that he did this version of Happy Scrooge, as I like to call him at the very end, the way that this Happy Scrooge works is that, despite the fact that earlier in the film they bashed on Bean Bunny, like Bean is carrying the Christmas turkey around, and that as he sings his song throughout the whole, the last bit of the film, it feels like Christmas song. He walks through the town, and everyone that he shot a dirty look to at the beginning, or, people that he was mean to, even if it was just in passing, everybody gets a gift. So, like, he visits Fozziwig and Sam in the rest home, and they get a gift. Like, they didn't have to do that, you know what I mean? Like, they could have gone straight to the whole Cratchit reveal. But the fact that he even hands a piece of cheese to the mouse that he shot a dirty look to at the very beginning of the film, it really brings everything full circle.
Yes,
yeah.
It does.
Something I was going to say about Michael Caine in the scene. They said in the behind-the-scenes documentary that he really wasn't a singer going into this movie, and he does a fine job, but you can kind of tell it's not. He's an actor. He's not really so much a singer. But I do think it kind of works for him here, the fact that he's not a singer or a dancer, because he's just a little bit awkward in the way that he moves through the scene, where he's having to sing and also at the same time think about, oh, I need to smile now, or I need to, move over here while still singing and everything. It kind of works in his favor because Scrooge isn't used to being a nice person and isn't used to. It's almost like it's a foreign concept to him, smiling and being nice to people.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But yeah, we get that, and then of course the last bit is him returning to the home of Bob Cratchit, although Cratchit never has seen him there before, and knocking on the door pretending that he's, upset because Cratchit didn't come to work, and instead actually offering to raise his salary in a nice little exchange with Miss Piggy.
And pay off his mortgage.
And then he brings in, apparently the entire town is going to squeeze into Bob Cratchit's house for Thanksgiving dinner.
I wrote down, and everyone in town shows up for the turkey dinner.
Which, by the way, the turkey is raw at that point. So the turkey dinner is going to be a while.
They got like 12 hours of cooking ahead of them. I agree.
At the very least, yeah.
Who's that turkey? I like one important note that I thought was cute is that this is one of the few times where the turkey is actually more than twice the size of Tiny Tim, which is a line from the Dickens novel. So
this is very true.
Very true.
Yeah, but that's the basics of the movie. It is, like I said, it's one of my favorites. And there's so many things throughout that they're just little touches that we've touched on a few of them, but are there any other little things that you guys, noticed throughout the movie that just, kind of make this one stand out to you?
The comment about Rizzo eating the vegetables, his mother told him never to eat vegetables that were singing.
Yeah.
That was like really hilarious to me.
I love Gonzo's throwaway comment to Rizzo after he said he landed on a hot steaming goose, and Gonzo just says, "Lucky," given his affinity for the chicken.
Yeah, I that was a little one thrown in there for the adults. If the kids get it, it's not their fault.
Right.
Actually, there's also a scene inside Fozziwigs where he sees a chicken.
Yeah.
And he almost walks away then.
Yeah.
Well, Gonzo will be Gonzo, right? I mean, that's the bottom line there. One of the things is there's a few buildings that are named after various things. There's a tavern in town that's actually called Statler and Waldorf. Now, a tavern is where in olden times people would actually not just drink but actually stay, and Statler and Waldorf are named after the hotels. And so that's a good one. There's another building called it's a store, and it's called the Micklewhite, which is Michael Caine's real last name.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep. And there's also a shop sign that reads Duncan and Kenworthy. Now, Duncan Kenworthy is one of the creators from Fraggle Rock. And there are a few Fraggle Rock Muppets floating around in the background. So dozers, though. I didn't see any dozers in the movie.
No, and there typically is in a lot of the movies.
Always in the background moving stuff. You always see them. I also want to say one thing we didn't really discuss is that because Jim Henson passed, this is the movie where Steve Whitmire took over voicing Kermit, and he actually voices Kermit to this day. And this is somebody who loved Kermit and Jim Henson so much that he actually made his own Kermit Muppet when he was a boy and actually went to see Jim Henson and do Kermit's voice for Jim Henson as a young boy. And eventually that led to him getting hired by Henson and then eventually becoming the voice of Kermit, which is just like an amazing story when you really think about it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
it definitely is.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like I said, this movie did not perform well at the box office, relatively speaking, of course, right? It made back its money, but ran up against Home Alone 2 and Aladdin, like Rachel mentioned. But I think in the years since it came out on video and since it's been played over the Christmas holidays, it has become a part of people's traditions. You know, it's so funny to think of something like that, of like a big, you know, studio film like that ends up doing that. But I mean, of course, that's what happened with It's a Wonderful Life, right? You know, that
right.
movie was, you know, public domain and just started getting played all the time. And that's how it became the you know, traditional film that it is.
It's typical for holiday movies is that they do not tend to do so well in the theater, but because, you know, Christmas and New Year's and all those end time Hanukkah are periods when family gets together and celebrates, and that takes place in the home. These are movies that it's easy to consume on a television set. You don't need to be in a movie theater to enjoy these.
Yeah.
Yeah, the critics at The Guardian actually had this on their list of their what we watch every Christmas list. So it is definitely loved both critically and by the fans.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt. No doubt. All right. Does anybody have anything else they want to say before we rate the movie?
I have one little fun fact. During the test audiences, when they were doing test audiences with Muppet Christmas Carol, children in the test audience overwhelmingly said that their favorite shot of the film was the mice in the hole in the wall singing during the song Scrooge.
Yeah, okay.
The only other thing I'd mention is that there are two songs that were cut from the movie, but they're actually on the soundtrack for the movie. One is a song called Room in Your Heart that's sung by Honeydew and Beaker. And the other one is Chairman of the Board that is sung by Sam Eagle, which is very entertaining to listen to. So,
yeah, I don't think they never filmed any footage for either one of those songs. I think they were cut before they went into production.
Yep, they were in the script, but they're actually sung on, and on the album, so, and mm-hmm. by the voice actors, so.
Yeah.
So one thing I want you to plug is Heather Henson, like I normally plug, since she lives here in Orlando, but although her website hasn't been updated, the Twitter for Ibex Puppetry is and that's what she owns, has those updates and what's going on in the puppet world and stuff like that. So if you want to go see puppet stuff and, you know, stuff like that, and, you know, immerse your children into that world. Because I think it's rarely done these days. So, you know.
Yep.
It's, you know, the movie, mm-hmm. it's a movie, we're movie land, we're, you know, so.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, and like Todd mentioned, the exhibit, the Jim Henson exhibit that comes around is definitely a good one as well.
I did read that they're making a Jim Henson documentary.
Not surprising. The book just came out. The biography came out earlier this year, and I hear that's really good. I have not read it yet, but I hear it's very good, so not surprising at all.
Yeah, the author of that biography was actually at New York Comic Con, and all the stories he told, I want to go out and buy the book. just from listening to him talk for about 10 minutes, I was sold. Because he got some really amazing stories from the Henson family.
Hmm. Yeah, sounds good. So, The Muppet Christmas Carol, I think it's time to rate this one. We'll let our guest, Anthony, go first. Anthony, what on a scale of 1 to 5, what would you give this film?
Well, I'm going to have to give it a 4.5, this version. But only because they have cut out the music number that we were discussing. With the music number, I truly would rate it a 5. It's a part of my Christmas season. It's playing in the background whenever I put up my Christmas tree every year, and then I have to watch it again where I can just sit down and just enjoy it. I love it.
Todd, do you want to take a stab at this one?
Yeah. So I really like this. I mean, look, I'm Jew boy all the way. But it's enjoyable. I like Dickens. I have actually read the novel, so it's not an easy novel to get through, first of all.
That's very true, yes.
For anyone who's ever read it or now thinking of reading it, just be forewarned. I like it. I think it's fun. I think it's enjoyable. I think some of the choices in this movie are what make this movie. Michael Caine, like I mentioned, the narration piece. And I really enjoy it. For me, I'm going to say it's a 4.
All right. I will give it a 5 myself. I am definitely, this is one of my favorite films of all time. Not just Muppet films, not just Christmas films. This is in my top 10 for sure. So I love this. Like you said, Anthony, it's one of my favorites. So. We'll let the ladies get the last laugh. Cheryl, you want to rate this one?
I'll give it a 1 for being Christmas and give it 3 for Muppets to bring up to a 4.
All right, Rachel, what's your word?
I'm going to give this a 4.5. I really want to give it a 5, but my split feelings about the song When Love Is Gone, I don't think it's necessarily the strongest song, even though I understand its place in the story. I think maybe the song could have been just a little bit better or more memorable for me. But I appreciate especially the craftsmanship on the puppets, and just the work that went into that is amazing to me. I have so much respect for the Muppets, for the people that their handlers, and just all the work that goes into that.
All right. So high marks all around for Muppet Christmas Carol. If you disagree with us, or you agree with this, you need to let us know. You can go over to DisneyFilmProject.com and leave a comment in the show notes. You can tweet us at DizFilmProject. You can hit us up on Facebook. We're at Disney Film Project there. And, of course, you can email us, DisneyFilmProject@gmail.com. So, Anthony, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you guys for having me, and happy holidays.
Indeed, it is almost upon us. As Cheryl said, Hanukkah is almost here, and then we will be well into the Christmas season right on the heels of that. So you are correct. So until next week, for Cheryl and Todd and Anthony and Rachel, I'm Ryan, and we will see you soon.
Well, I'm usually trustworthy.
It was the frog's idea. Yeah, it was the frog's idea.
Boy, that's scary stuff. Should we be worried about the kids in the audience?
Let us deal with the eviction notices for tomorrow, Mr. Cratchit. Tomorrow's Christmas, sir. Very well. You may gift wrap them.
You will love business. It is the American way.